The Lord be with you. A reading from the Holy Gospel according to Luke. That very day, the first day of the week, two of Jesus' disciples were going to a village 7 miles from Jerusalem called Emmaus. And as they were walking, they were conversing about all the things which had occurred. It happened that while they were conversing and debating, Jesus himself drew near and walked with them, but their eyes were prevented from knowing him. And he asked them, "What are you discussing as you walk along?" They stopped, and looking downcast, one of them, named Cleopas, said to him in reply, "Are you the only visitor in Jerusalem who does not know all the things that took place there these past few days?" And he replied, "What sort of things?" And they said to him, "The things that happened to Jesus the Nazarene, who was a prophet mighty in deed and word before God and all the people, and how the chief priests and rulers handed him over to a sentence of death, and they crucified him. We were hoping that he would be the one to redeem Israel. And besides all of this, some women from our group, however, have astounded us. While they were at the tomb in the morning, they did not find his body. They came back and reported that they had indeed seen a vision of angels who announced that he was alive. Then some of those who were with us went to the tomb and found things just as the women had told them, but they did not see." And he said to them, "Oh, how foolish you are, how slow of heart to believe all that the prophets have spoken. Was it not necessary that Christ had to suffer these things and enter into glory? Then, beginning with Moses and all the prophets, he interpreted for them what referred to him in all the scriptures. And as they approached the village to which they were going, he gave the impression he was going further. But they urged him, 'Stay with us. It is already evening, and the day is almost over.' So he went in and he stayed with them. And it happened that while they were at table, he took bread, said the blessing, broke it, and gave it to them. And with that, their eyes were opened. And they recognized him, and he vanished from their sight. Then they said to each other, 'Were not our hearts burning within us while he spoke to us on the way and opened the scriptures to us?' So they set out at once and returned to Jerusalem, where they found gathered together the 11 and those with them who were saying, 'The Lord has truly been raised, and he has appeared to Simon.' Then they recounted what had taken place on the way and how he was known to them in the breaking of the bread." The Gospel of the Lord. The gospel reading which we have today comes from the book of Luke. It's found only in Luke's gospel and is the very end of the gospel of Luke, chapter 24. Reflecting on this during the week, I found a very powerful teaching that may be meaningful to each and every one of us as we follow the Lord. That is that Jesus meets people where they are. So in their confusion and their doubt, they're walking toward Emmaus. They're walking away from Jerusalem. Biblically, Jerusalem, the place of destiny. It involves suffering. It involves resurrection to new life. The place of destiny is Jerusalem. They're walking away from their destiny, and they're walking into darkness. They're walking west. The day is almost over, and the night is coming. It says so in the gospel. And they're discussing as they walked how they are disillusioned. They are unbelieving. But Jesus walks with them. He doesn't reject them. He doesn't turn around. He walks with them toward Emmaus. He walks with them into the darkness. And then they recognize him in the breaking of the bread. He vanishes, and they return to Jerusalem, to their place of destiny. Now, what does this mean to us? Wherever you are in your life, that's where Jesus meets you. You don't have to change. You will be changed. You will be transformed when Jesus meets you. The manner in which Jesus makes this proclamation, in Greek called the kerygma of Jesus, the proclamation of Jesus, not just the substance, but the manner of his proclamation. The manner in which he proclaims the resurrection and the life. In the context in which he finds people. I know many of you are at home and you listen to these homilies and you have notes because you write to me and you tell me about the notes. Take a look at any one of these stories where Jesus meets the person where the person is. Remember the second chapter of John's Gospel, we had it a little while ago, where Jesus has a visit night at nighttime. Nicodemus comes to see him. He listens to Nicodemus. He is patient with Nicodemus. And Nicodemus goes through a conversion. Move on and read chapter 4 in the Gospel of John. Remember the woman at the well, the Samaritan woman, married 5 times, living with a man who is not her husband. Jesus does not condemn her. He doesn't make a judgment. He meets her where she is, has a conversation with her. She goes through a conversion. Read on in John, like John chapter 21, you have a marvelous story about the conversion of Peter. And finally, take a look at chapter 19 in Luke's gospel, an extraordinary story about this fellow named Zacchaeus. He's a reviled, rich, selfish tax collector. And Jesus comes to Jericho and he says, Zacchaeus, I'd like to have dinner at your home tonight. You have dinner at my home tonight. And he goes through, Zacchaeus goes through a conversion. That's the first thing to keep in mind, that Jesus meets the person where the person is. And in the meeting, a conversion will happen when we are touched by the power of Jesus Christ and by the grace of God, the love, the care, the patience, the understanding, the belonging of Jesus Christ. In the Greek language, there are 2 words for time. One is chronos. Chronos gives us an English word chronology. It means sequential time, hours and minutes. The other word is kairos. Kairos doesn't mean 60 minutes, an hour. The hour has coming for the Son of Man to be glorified. It means a moment, a defining moment. A moment that changes our lives, the kairos. So let me look at kairos as a human experience. In all of these stories I just mentioned, there are kairos moments where the person goes through a transformation.
So how do we get a Kairos moment? A moment? Richard Rohr says, your Kairos moment is the grace of failure. Strangely, the grace of failure, the grace of doubt, discouragement, uncertainty, where you wonder, perhaps where you're lost, you're wandering out there and you can't find the center. The Kairos moment is a moment when you're open to the visitation of Jesus Christ, such as two disciples on the road to Emmaus. They're confused, discouraged, they're lost. They're walking away from their destiny. They meet Jesus in the time of discouragement. That's why Rohr says, the grace of failure, confusion, doubt, uncertainty, when you're discouraged, these are the moments, the Kairos moments, when we're open to the visitation of Jesus Christ. Think about that in your own life. And how the kerygma of Jesus Christ, the manner in which he preaches, the manner in which he approaches people and welcomes people, becomes his doctrine. As followers of Jesus Christ, we are called to follow his example. It's not just a proclamation of the word of God that we make, the profession of faith as Catholics and followers of Jesus Christ. It's more than that. It's the manner in which we make the proclamation, the manner in which we treat people. Years and years ago, when we were all young at Holy Family, it's a few years ago, I kind of thought we should have a song at Holy Family, that the song will be us. This song will say, this is who we are. So I went to Tony and all these very smart musical people, and said, find a song that we think would say, this is who Holy Family is. And they went around and around, and they found a song called All Are Welcome. And said, this will be our song. This will be our kerygma, the statement of who we are. All are welcome. And that's the manner in which we want to see ourselves. That's the manner in which we make a proclamation to the world. But how does this find flesh and blood? How does this welcoming find reality? Well, let me give you two examples of how it has a meaning for me. It's not unusual for me to have an appointment with a couple that comes to see me, to say, we're not married in the church, and we'd like to get married in the church. There's some canonical impediment. There's something in the way of their getting married in the church. So our marriage isn't holy. We can't go to the sacraments. The first thing I explain is, a marriage is not holy because it happens in a church. A marriage is holy if two people make the marriage holy, if they forgive one another, they care for one another, they're faithful to one another, their understanding of one another's needs, the allowances they make for one another in moments of difficulty. That's holy. That's what makes a marriage holy. It's the two people in the marriage that make marriage holy. So I talked to them about their marriage. Is your marriage happy? Oh yeah, we get along fine, yeah. We love one another, we're faithful to one another. That's a holy marriage. Let me tell you what I hear you saying to me. I hear you saying to me, we have a marriage that we believe is holy, and we'd like to give that marriage as a gift to the church. And you're asking me if I would accept the gift. And I said, be honored to accept your gift. That's the beginning of the conversation. They're not a problem. For me, they're not a problem. For me, they're a blessing. That's the kerygma of Jesus Christ. Now we'll work out any canonical issues. We'll work those out as we go. But we must understand how Jesus Christ has brought us together and how the teachings of Jesus Christ must define the moment. Let me give you another example. A few years ago here, I had a very, very large funeral. Hispanic family, faithful, wonderful people. And when we had finished the funeral, the mother of a family came here to see me up the sanctuary. She said, my son is here at this funeral. He's gay, he's married. He and his husband are visiting us from San Francisco. Could we get a blessing for my son and his husband? And having read the Vatican document, Fiducia Supplicans, I said, yes, bring them in right now. So the two men came in and they knelt at that altar rail there. Their whole family, about 15 or 20, got around. And I laid hands on them. And we all blessed them and say, we bless your faith. We bless your courage to keep coming to a church that frequently doesn't understand you. We bless the prayer you have, the prayer you share. We bless the love you have for one another. We bless the life that you'd like to share. We bless you as church. We bless you as family. I bless them in this manner. We all bless them in this manner. The people cried. They're not expecting a blessing from the church like that. But that's the kerygma of Jesus Christ. We're walking into the sunset. We're confused. We're discouraged. But Jesus walks with us. So where are you in your life that somebody needs your blessing? Somebody needs you to make a proclamation and a statement of your discipleship with Jesus Christ to say, all are welcome. What more can we say? What more can we do to tell people at Holy Family, all are welcome? I had reason in the last week to go back and read some literature from the Victorian era, almost 200 years ago. And I came upon Aurora Leigh. You'll be familiar with Aurora Leigh, you know, it's Elizabeth Barrett Browning. And this is what she says poetically. Listen to the message here. Earth crams with heaven. It's crammed with heaven. And every common bush afire with God. But only he who sees takes off his shoes. Remember Moses back in Exodus came into the presence of God, took off his shoes. Only he who sees takes off his shoes. When he takes off his shoes, he is barefoot and powerless. Only then can you see. Amen.